Final hour, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Keyser here with you on this Thursday morning. And as we do every Thursday, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And welcome in Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports. Charles, Happy New Year. Good morning. Thanks for being with us.
Happy New Year to you guys. I'm sure there's nothing to talk about today, so let's keep this a short one.
Nothing going on this time of year. It's all good. Charles, I do want to start on the Titans front. So we've been discussing this all week. You know, obviously, you know, storylines for this team right now in terms of what's left to play for is basically zero. Right. It is the potential of Derrick Henry's last game in a Titan uniform coming up on Sunday, and we'll see what the market for him ends up looking like this offseason. But just from your view of watching Derrick Henry, if this is it for him in a Titans jersey, how do you put into words what he's meant to this team, this franchise, and really to the NFL at large?
Oh, I mean, I think it's massive, and you know, just in terms of he's a different kind of back than we've seen over the course of history, just in terms of his physicality. I mean, look, you can compare some guys to him. There's no question about that, but it's definitely rare in this era to see a player who builds into the second half of games. You know, when I'm talking about the height, although, look, the guy ran for 1,000 yards this year, which is a stunner to me when you consider the punishment everyone has taken behind that offensive line. I thought this was a season where I'm like, you know, really, what's Henry got left in the tank? And there was more than I thought. And given the surrounding talent, I would say this is probably one of his tougher seasons where you've looked at him and been really, really impressed with what he's been able to endure this year. And like you said, we'll see what his market is. I'm like, oh, maybe he does have, you know, some tread left there for the right team built the right way that, you know, doesn't have to put 300 carries on him. What's interesting to me, though, when I think about him is, I don't know if people remember, there was a time where there was like a question whether he could do it. And the trade deadline prior to his first big breakout season, he was available.
Yeah.
Like, I remember talking to teams and they were like, you know, like they're not shopping Henry, but like they're definitely listening. And like, if you offer them like a second round pick, you can go get him right now. And no one was willing to do it.
And that was 2018, right? The 2018 season.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I remember I talked to somebody in the organization before the next season started, and there was certainly a question internally amongst some people about, like, you know, he's big, he's physical, he's very upright. Like, you know, can he last the way that he runs? And I think there was a question about whether he could ever legitimately be a star back with the way that he played. And then obviously that was all erased. It was funny because the assessment I got, and this just shows you, like, I hate to even admit this, but the assessment I got was like, you know, Mariota's going to have this, you know, monster season. It's finally like falling into place for him, but geez, Derrick Henry, I don't know. It doesn't seem like he's really going to turn out to be the player that we thought. And, I'm having a brain freeze right here. The tight end at the time that ended up going to the Patriots.
You're talking about Jonnu Smith?
Smith, yeah. Jonnu, yeah, I remember. And then that was the big, like, Jonnu's going to be the big breakout, Jonnu's going to be the superstar. And I'm like, you know, years later, he's like, geez, man.
you just don't know.
you got to take it with a grain of salt, the assessments that you hear. And every time I would see Henry have like a monster game, I'd always go back to being like, yeah, it's so funny that this was someone who was definitely questioned. And I think also beyond the fact that he produced this year, he also was not like, he was like a team guy. Like anything you'd hear is like, you know, he doesn't want to go at the trade deadline. He's not like pushing to be dealt when other players, you know, who were veterans at that stage in their career, they're kind of like, hey, I want to go and I want to win a title. And, you know, get me to a place where I need to be. And I never really felt like I heard that about Derrick Henry. And, you know, very, very impressed. And, you know, he should be considered one of the all-time greats, I think, in this franchise, regardless of how the rest of his career unfolds.
Well, we'll stick with the Titans. I'll ask you this on the air since you don't, apparently don't answer my texts anymore.
Wow.
Chad Forbes at NFL Draft Bites. We trust this guy? He's talking about Vrabel, power play, wants out, et cetera, et cetera. You know, it's you know, add it to the mix of sort of that sort of narrative out there right now.
I don't know Chad personally, but I do know that people who I respect him. You know, some people that I follow him. And that's always, you know, that always in my mind raises a flag. I'm like, okay, all right. Some people that I think generally kind of know and understand the league and know some things are following this guy. And maybe I should know who this guy is. I don't know him personally, but you know, look, there's a lot of stuff out there right now on Mike Vrabel and obviously, you know, Rand Carson. Let me ask you this though, because I struggled. I'm hoping you guys can answer this for me. So when he says, "Of course I want to be back," right? How is the question worded to him? Like I went through the whole transcript and then I pulled up the video I could find, and it was interesting to me. Number one, we didn't get to this until way down. I'm like, when are they going to get to this? Like, I've been in those press conferences where you're like, I know the question I want to ask. I know I want that to be the first question, but we'll wait until number 17. We'll let it soften up a little bit before we get into this. How exactly was the question phrased to him? Because that to me, I want to know how he answered and what the question was that how it was put to him.
Well, he initially was asked about social media stuff about him and Rand.
Do you need to address with your team? I saw that.
He decided to start saying some things that you should never say if children may be seeing your press conference, which we will not repeat.
Ruined a lot of dreams, but go ahead.
Yeah. And then basically someone piped in, so you want to be here, right?
Glennon
said, so you want to be here. So it was okay. just basically popped in and said, so you want to be here. Yeah.
All right. So that's an opinion question. So you want to be here. Like, what's your opinion on this situation? And he says, of course I want to be here. That's the wiggle room. All right. And that's kind of what drives me nuts at times. Cause I've done it in the past when I go back and I'll listen to like, if I've had one-on-ones and stuff and I'm like, why did I not ask it with a hard edge? The hard edge here for Mike Vrabel is, Mike, are you going to be the Tennessee Titans coach in 2024? Mike, are you going to be the Tennessee Titans coach in 2024? And how does he answer that question? Because that's a very straightforward question.
He's not in control of that either, though. I mean,
Mike, I'm asking you: are you going to be the coach or not? And how he answers will inform everything. Because if it's anything but yes, then it means absolutely. There's a possibility dude's out. Okay, possibility he gets traded. Possibility he you know, behind the scenes is not 100% happy about how he's viewing the future or whatever. Because for all coaches that are under contract for another 2 years, that answer is yes. Now, if he says, hey, you know what? That's not my choice. Okay. Once again, anything but yes means that there's a potential problem here. And it's harder for him to sidestep the aspect of there's a potential problem. If he says, that's not my choice, then the follow-up question is, okay, Mike, well, you're saying that's not your choice. So that means there's a possibility you're not going to be the coach of this team next year, right? And then how does he answer that question? Like the questions where you're like, do you want to be here? What do you think of social media? That's all, you know, I get it. I understand. But you're working the edges there. And you give somebody an ability to finesse when you answer that question. I'm not trying to give this isn't me sitting here trying to judge journalism.
Journalism 101?
Yeah, I'm not trying to do that. I'm just trying to say that, like, when I heard that answer, I'm like, nah, that question, there was some wiggle room there. Okay. It gave him an opportunity for a cutback. And when you just ask straight up, are you going to be here, Mike? And if he does not say yes, then it opens up a whole world of possibilities. Why aren't you saying yes? Like, geez, Mike, everybody seems to want you here, right? So why aren't you saying yes? Why is that not just an easy yes? You have 2 years left in your contract. And that, to me, that's what bothers me, because I think that was like, I remember when Sean Payton, it came down the stretch with Sean Payton in New Orleans. Every once in a while, someone would ask him a question with a little more hard edge on it, and he wasn't able to definitively say, yeah, of course I'm going to be here. with the Saints, and that's when you're like, all right, yeah, there's something cooking. It feels like there's more going on than you know Sean wanted to say publicly. That's how I would put it to Vrabel. If he does not say yes, then you have a barrage of 5 or 6 questions after that where you're like, why are you not just saying yes, Mike? Because it's a yes answer when you're under contract for 2 years and you have the resume that you have. That is a yes answer for most coaches. And if it's not, let's get into why it's not.
We'll have more with Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports coming up next. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Continuing our conversation with Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports. So, Charles, the last couple minutes of that Lions-Cowboys game, there's a whole lot going on. First off, you got Mike McCarthy deciding to throw the ball and leave like a minute left on the clock for an unnecessary amount of time.
40.
Yeah, 40. Beautiful stuff. Yeah,
here's another 40 seconds, yeah, by the way. Here, let's just go ahead and we're going to keep throwing the ball at a time. We should definitely be running it. That'd no problem.
That stuff going on with McCarthy, you had, you know, obviously when they get down to the end zone, the debacle with the officiating and the reporting and non-reporting with the Lions right there. And then after that, you know, after the penalty is called, you have Dan Campbell apparently willing to go for two all the way back to his own 45-yard line, even after the penalty was called. A lot going on in the last couple minutes there. What was your take on all of it, particularly the officiating debacle that has been the story of the league the past week?
Well, I was there for that, and it's funny because I'm sitting next to two fellow Spartans, like talking like heavy hitter Hall of Fame types, and
Gosselin and
Jarrett Bell, the three of us.
Yes,
and so we're watching. We're like, all right, man, they're going for two. They announced 70s eligible over the PA, all this stuff. And then they throw to 68, and I literally turn to Jarrett, and I go, did they announce the wrong guy? What just happened there? Did they just simply, like, botch it on the announcement to the fans? Because Taylor Decker clearly was not who they said was eligible. And then we just, you know, there was a complete and total descent into chaos. And, like, to me, I think it's hilarious. It's not hilarious. It's really messed up. But it's funny that this is coming off of Goodell's, Super Bowl press conference last year, where he's like, you know, officiating at the highest level ever. It's funny, and everything's fine. It's great. We're great, you know. And then you have a call that, or a misstep, a miscue by Brad Allen, the referee, where no matter what, one of those teams was getting screwed. And you're like, okay, so if you let it go, it means that you told the defense that the wrong player was eligible, and now Dallas, clearly you lined your defense based on the information we gave you, so we're going to screw you. And now on the flip side of the coin, we announced the wrong person. You know, we didn't hear who was supposed to be eligible, and so, you know, Detroit is the one that gets, you know, whacked on it. And then I love that the follow-up to this is they sent out this, you know, super passive-aggressive video that's like, players, you better make sure that we know who's checking in. This is like completely on them. And like afterward, Brad Allen, the pool report, we're in each locker room, we're kind of going back and forth, and everybody's like, you seen the pool report? What's the pool report? What was the response for this? Basically, he just said the Lions lied. He's like, here's what happened. They told me X, and then they lined up in a way that suggested Y, but they told me X, so they're wrong. They just straight up made this up. I'm like, man, this is messed up. Like, they clearly screwed this up. They clearly are not allowed to say we screwed it up because it gave the Cowboys a win that affected seeding. It's going to affect potentially where playoff games take place. It affected both teams. And oh, by the way, the Niners, 49ers got the number one seed because of the loss. And it was like a multitude of things, and it's a horror show for the NFL, but I can see people complaining that the Lions got cute. You know, you send multiple linemen at a referee in a situation like that. You're trying to get the defense to go, what's going on? How come there's all these guys there? Maybe somebody's not paying attention. They don't listen to the ref when he comes and says, here's who's eligible. And then right before the snap, they're panicking because they're like, oh, man, I didn't pay attention. Like, is there somebody eligible here who's not supposed to be, or who is, and not, I don't know who it is. And now you've screwed up, and they're scoring the game-winning two-point conversion. But that's the gamesmanship of it. And but the Lions just, they tricked the ref. I don't think he did it on purpose, but they tricked the ref instead of tricking the Dallas Cowboys. And you know, that there's, I guess there's the consequence of it. The epilogue to this is Detroit got two more shots at that 2-point conversion. They went for it both times. They didn't convert either time. And, you know, it's, you know, so you live by it, you die by it. The officiating stinks in that situation. Two interesting things I learned. Okay. Number one, I didn't realize how commonplace it was for coaches to have meetings with the officiating crew pregame to go, hey, here's a play that we might run. Here's exactly how we want to do it. Or, you know, and I've heard, you know, sometimes they're very specific. Sometimes they're not so specific because of trust issues that all head coaches seem to have with every person on the planet. And then secondly, though, I didn't know this, and Jory Epstein, my fellow national reporter, she told me that referees aren't always in that meeting, and which Brad Allen obviously is a referee for the crew, which shocks me. If you're going to have that meeting with a staff before a game and they're going to tell you, here are the special plays we're going to run, particularly as it pertains to eligibility issues, should the referee not be in that meeting? Like, how do you not have the full crew in for that meeting? That blows my mind that there's not a just a full accounting for every official in the crew, because then, you know, if you're handing off, here's what we're going to do, and then someone's got to go to the referee and go, okay, well, here's everything that was laid out, here's the notes, whatever, maybe you lose something in transition. And that clearly is what, you know, I think Dan Campbell is most upset about, is that he felt like he met with them before, he told them what he was going to do, they did it, and then they didn't call it the way that even Campbell beforehand had told them, here's precisely what we're aiming to do.
So I just, you know, accountability here to me has got to be part of the answer. I mean, I do have, Charles, I have sympathy. It's and a lot of mistakes that officials make. They're human beings. They're always going to make mistakes.
Yeah.
You know, like, again, like the pool report situation here, it is so, as you know, it's so locked down. It's so, okay, get your questions. You know, it's, I'm not saying that we need to have crew chief full-on press conference after every game, but why can't we have more accountability, more back and forth, and just questions and answers at least? And also, why can't the NFL be more transparent about what they are doing to punish crews?
Right. Well, that's exactly, I think, as you said, they're human beings, and we all watch the game frame by frame now. And not only do we watch it frame by frame, every network then immediately has some ex-official who's got a ton of experience who hops in and immediately says, here's how they screwed this up.
Or, like, well, immediately, you know, makes excuses for them, usually.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's right. There's certainly an element of that, and then there's, you know, but then there's also the flip side of you will get officials who will be, like, very critical of a situation. It's a much different environment than it used to be, and so I'm fine for an element of grace. However, I am also with you that what bothers me about this is there is no real transparency. The league, I think that particularly given that the league is now embracing revenue that's adjacent to the game in terms of like gambling, like it's not, you know, it's gambling adjacent revenue that they're now opening these streams for, I think you should then have, okay, here's how we grade it out, each crew, every single game. You know, we should know what officials, what grades they're going to get, why, you know, what went into those grades, what calls were missed. And I also think that beyond that transparency, when it is a situation like this, there should be more than one pool reporter who's allowed access to that official to ask a question. And it bothers me that there's not that level of transparency. Now, why do they do it? I get why they do it, because they don't want this to become more of a focal issue than it already is. I think who knows what can happen in exchanges with reporters. You know, officials aren't used to that kind of environment. You know, we've seen press conferences with coaches, GMs, players all the time where they end up saying something that, you know, is really, really not in their best interest, and they open a can of worms. That can happen with officials, and the league does not, they don't want any part of that whatsoever. You know, I think it's just the transparency and the fact that I want to see these guys graded out week to week. I want to know why, you know, some of them might be demoted, as, you know, I think Adam Schefter reported that Brad Allen and some guys on that crew, guys and gals in officiating, obviously, but some people on that crew won't necessarily be calling postseason games or, you know, which is an element of a demotion. I would like to know more of what the actual data is behind that. And we don't get that. And I think that's part of the frustration. So,
yep. It's really interesting stuff. Charles, great stuff as always, man. Appreciate it so much.
Wait.
Go ahead.
Wait, before we go, I want to know, what's the Rex Road rant? I want to ask you guys this. I always forget to ask.
What was my Rex rant?
Yeah.
Yeah, what's the Rex rant?
I yelled at myself for voting for Jaden Daniels for the Heisman after watching Penix yesterday. I'm like, dang it, I screwed up, man. Go with the guy who who contributes to team greatness, you know?
Now, not that Penix hasn't had more than one game, but, you know, let's see. I mean, I'm not a Penix doubter, but let's see how he plays against the Michigan defense, which is going to be better in Texas. It's funny because I'm doing a story on Penix versus, like, J.J. McCarthy for QB4 in the draft, like kind of how this could play into it. And it's,
Penix,
you know,
is
these
better.
Two guys, you definitely have, when you talk to, like, personnel opinions, when you dive into personnel opinions, they both have, like, doubters, like people who do not like J.J. McCarthy, others who look at Penix's medical and they're like, 4 season-ending injuries, 2, you know, 2 ACL tears, an AC joint, like a clavicle sternum injury. We're not even, he's going to be subboard. He's not even going to be on our board. And we wouldn't touch him until the value wipes away all that risk. So they're like third round, you know?
That's not happening.
No, I don't. I mean, like look at the teams. There are so many teams beyond, you know, that top, very top of the draft. There are a lot of teams when you get into like the sort of 10-ish to 20-ish range, you can make a lot of arguments for quarterbacks needed in franchises. And so you're going to see quarterbacks pushed up beyond the top 3. I do still think that despite what a lot of people are saying right now, not that this couldn't change, but I do think the shelf right now is still, you know, Caleb Williams, Drake May, Jaden Daniels. And then I think people feel like there's definitely a shelf drop to the next quarterback drafted. Now, is Penix affecting that now? Yeah, I think he definitely is. He's also throwing the 2 wide receivers and Rome Odunze, who we'll see. I mean, he could be wide receiver 2, I think. And Jalen Polk, who, man, I mean, you know, doesn't have, obviously it's his big season was this year, but I've seen receivers who look like that, who are fast like that, drafted pretty high on a limited resume. So it'll be interesting to see where Penix lands. I don't think you made the wrong decision, though. I really don't. I'm like, come on, man. Like, we're really going to pretend like Daniels didn't have a
that's what I tried to tell him.
Unbelievable,
well, he did.
Spectacular season.
He did, but I think I think contributing to team greatness is usually part of it, and I ignored that this year. And I just, after the last game, I kind of felt
bad. You don't think Jane Daniels contributed to team greatness?
I mean, they were fine.
I mean, granted,
they were okay. Yeah. They're okay.
I mean,
their D sucked.
Look, Washington is. Let's see. Went to Michigan State, but I'm a believer in Michigan having a particularly defensively pretty darn good team. And I'm like, all right, let's. I want to see how he plays against Michigan, and you know, because I do think I lean more into that than the performance against Texas. But you know, the thing too, people who love Penix, they'll be like, man, he made Indiana like that team. You know, they were like a 7-win team with him. Yeah. And what have they been since? Like, and it's not easy to do that in Indiana. And you know, had it not been for the spate of injuries, who knows what he looks like today? Because there's certainly that must have taken something off of a portion of his career. And he's a win from the pocket guy. And I'll tell you what. I know we all love the dual threat quarterbacks and all these different things, and you know, but I also know that people think they're starting to recognize more and more that's a very depreciating aspect in the game of quarterbacks in the NFL level. And so for him to be able to win from the pocket, inside structure, a lot of teams are digging that right now, given, you know, some of the results and particularly things that they've had to look at with like Caleb Williams playing out of structure so much this year. He is a, from a traditional standpoint, he's a quarterback that a lot of teams are going to like. And I think, you know, you said, talk about him spinning it. He's going to do that well in the workouts. I think he's going to look fantastic leading into the draft. So it'll be fun to watch, you know, where it really goes for him. And it's great for the Titans because I think there's a chance that, you know, there could be 4 quarterbacks come off before their pick. And it's a heck of a draft to have a lot of other guys push down to you. So,
yep, no question about that. Charles, happy new year. Thanks so much for being with us, and we'll talk to you next week.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys. Have a good one.
Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports with us on Robbie and Rexroad. You can check it out every Thursday morning from 8 to 8:30 here on the program. We'll react to what Charles had to say coming up next. Make sure you make your silly underdog picks today for your chance to win weekly prizes. You can play at thegamenashville.com or the 102.5 The Game app. Silly underdog picks presented by Volunteer Hose and Gasket. This is Robbie and Rexroad, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.